Welcome to EVN Talks. I'm Maria Titizian, and today we're diving into one of the most critical challenges and opportunities facing Armenia today, how to align climate action with sustainable development. As Armenia prepares to host COP17 in 2026, although that is about biodiversity, it's an opportunity for the country at a pivotal moment to rethink how it grows, how it adapts to changing climate, how it builds resilience for future generations. And resilience is one thing we've often talked about in Armenia. Joining me to unpack all of this is Julie Rosenberg, a senior economist at the World Bank's Climate Change Group, where she leads global work on country climate and development reports, or CCDRs. These reports are designed to help countries integrate climate goals with economic planning. Julie is also one of the lead authors of the Country Climate and Development Report for Armenia, which outlines how Armenia can pursue a low-carbon, resilient development path while addressing key vulnerabilities in water, agriculture, energy, and infrastructure. In our conversation, we will explore the report's key findings, what climate-smart growth could look like for Armenia, and how the country can use this moment to lead perhaps a regional climate diplomacy. So, Julie, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
Let's start with the big picture, because it's best to do that. What are the key findings of the Country Climate and Development Report for Armenia, and what makes Armenia's climate and development challenges particularly urgent or unique, if they are?
Okay, so I'll speak about two different kinds of challenges. On the one end are the challenges related to the physical impact of climate change that are already impacting Armenia and that are going to get worse in the future. Already Armenia today suffers from intense flooding, from drought, landslides that damage the infrastructure and impact communities, in particular poor communities. And we know that climate change is going to make these events more and more intense and more frequent. And in the report, we looked in particular at the water scarcity issue that is very pressing for Armenia, because currently there are already some issues around water stress. There are very high losses in water systems for municipal water, for irrigation. And we saw that in the future with climate change, this tension can become much larger between demand for water and supply. And we also looked at how these impacts, especially through the agriculture sector, can impact poverty in the future. And we find that even in 5 years, the poverty rate in Armenia can increase because of the impacts of climate change. It can increase by 2.7 percentage point, which is quite high and short term.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, it's interesting because in Armenia, we oftentimes say, oh, we have an abundance of water. And probably we do, but it's the loss. And I can't tell you how many times just in Yerevan, you'll see a water main, a pipe that has burst and water is just flowing, or the way they even try to water this very scarce greenery we have in the city. And it's about waste, right? Inefficiency, waste, improper management that could
exactly
alleviate so many of the problems that we have.
Yes, and climate change is just making existing problems more pressing, mm-hmm, and more challenging.
Another thing that you talked about in the report, which is quite a technical report, a very, you know, substantive one. I just want to talk about some of the key numbers or figures that you wrote about that I think is important for our audience to also know, that natural gas represents up to 63% of Armenia's total energy supply. And this is one of the world's largest shares. And all of it is imported mostly from the Russian Federation, creating high vulnerability to external shocks. How can Armenia mitigate this? I mean, are there possibilities to diversify our energy resources?
Absolutely. So that's the other side of the coin, of the climate coin, if you want. On the one hand, you have the physical impacts. On the other hand, you need to reduce emissions, because the whole world has to reduce emissions for climate impacts to be controlled. And in a way, this is very aligned with the challenge that you just mentioned, the fact that Armenia is so dependent on imported natural gas. Indeed, it's one of the countries in the world with the highest dependence on natural gas. And natural gas is used not only to generate electricity, which is what most countries use it for, but also for heating and transport. And that, in addition to energy dependence, also creates very high level of air pollution that are dangerous for people's health, especially in big cities. And so in order to address these problems, there are now very cost-effective technologies like renewable energy, electric vehicles, heat pumps that help get rid of this natural gas and replace it in a way that eventually saves money to consumers, reduces air pollution, and increases energy independence.
It's interesting that you say that because, again, as a person, a lay person who's not an economist or an expert in energy, I always thought that natural gas was cleaner, obviously, than coal or even electricity. But obviously, it's contributing to high emissions.
Correct. So you are right that natural gas is cleaner than coal, and it's also cleaner than oil and gasoline. When it comes to greenhouse gases emissions. That's why some countries are transitioning from coal to gas when they're producing electricity. However, it's still greenhouse gases emissions, and it also produces this local air pollution that can be very dangerous for health, especially when it's used at very high levels.
One of the report's core messages is that climate action in Armenia can be pro-growth. As I said at the top, this is about opportunities. So whenever you're confronted with a challenge that might seem overwhelming or impossible to overcome, we have to look at how we can do that through the opportunities. Can you elaborate, for example, on how decarbonization and adaptation strategies could help drive economic growth rather than hinder it?
Yes, absolutely. So again, it's like two sides of these coins, right? On the one end, the adaptation, on the other hand, decarbonization. I'll start with adaptation. Armenia has a thriving agriculture and food sector that's contributing to exports, that's employing 20% of the population, and it's the sector that's the most vulnerable to climate impacts. And this is also where there are large opportunities for the agriculture sector to modernize. Irrigation systems can be modernized to reduce water losses, increase the efficiency of the use of water. Different techniques, different kinds of crops can be used by farmers. And this forms a very solid basis to first increase agricultural production, make it more resistant to shocks, and then help the agri-food business as a whole grow. Right now, the food packaging industry, for example, is growing. And, you know, with increased food safety standards, it can start accessing a wider number of markets, especially the EU market. And then on the other hand, there's the decarbonization where, again, Armenia has a very dynamic private sector that's investing in electricity production, especially solar energy. There's very high solar energy potential in Armenia, which allows producing a lot of electricity for very cheap costs. And the private sector saw that, it's been investing. Now it's facing some technical and regulatory barriers. For example, the grid, the transmission grid that allows bringing this electricity to consumers is not strong enough and needs to be reinforced with new public investments in order to accommodate this solar energy.
63% of our energy comes from natural gas. The rest is nuclear energy and I would imagine the hydroelectric power plants that we have, right?
Yes, and some oil as well.
And some oil as well. Realistically, of that, what percentage could solar energy, what would be its percentage?
So it could become a very high percentage because the advantage of solar energy is that once you're producing clean energy, clean electricity, then you can use electricity to replace gas heating and gas transport. So you can eliminate almost all the uses of gas, including also in industry. So you can basically electrify the economy using electric cars, heat pumps, different kind of technologies in industry. And then your whole economy is powered by solar through this clean electricity.
Are there countries that have been able to transition, countries similar to Armenia in terms of size, dependency? Because as a country with none of these resources, I mean, no natural gas or oil, are there countries in the world that have been able to transition to solar energy?
Yes, so a lot of countries are in the process of transitioning. There are countries that are already almost decarbonized in the electricity sector, but because they have a lot of hydropower. So they started already almost clean. In Europe, there are countries that have been transitioning away from fossil fuels, like in the UK, in Spain. They don't necessarily use as much solar because they don't have the resource, but they invest in wind. You can also use the ocean waves to create electricity. There's a whole range of different technologies that can be used. But most European countries now are decarbonizing very fast their electricity production.
You discuss, or the report discusses, and you mentioned this now, but public and private, the need for substantial investment. Obviously, anything that we do is going to require that. It has to be both public and private to achieve these climate goals. What financing models or international mechanisms might be most effective in mobilizing climate finance for a country like Armenia?
There are many ways to go about it. First of all, on the decarbonization side, we saw through the analysis in the report that 80% of these investments can be private. So the private sector, and the private sector in Armenia has a strong track record of actually mobilizing finance for electricity investments and solar energy. So that can continue. But then there's also a need for public investments, like I said, in the transmission grid, and then in the irrigation systems, in the transport systems for public, electric public transportation. And there, there's international financing organizations like the World Bank can help bring concessional financing. Climate funds can also bring some grants. And then there's also an opportunity to access in general the broader financial markets that are looking also for green investments through green bonds in particular. And Armenia is making progress there because they're working on what we call a green taxonomy for the financial sector that will very clearly identify what are the types of investments that are green and then that can benefit from this kind of green finance that is in increasing supply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So look, climate action is not just technical, right? It's also political, social. It's about policy legislation. What are some of the obstacles that you found in your research that could be a barrier to decarbonization in Armenia? Let's start with policy or legislation, because you noted something about solar power suppliers having some difficulties.
Yes, I think Armenia now is reaching a point where it needs to change its legislation to accommodate more solar because it already has invested quite a lot in solar. But in order to really take over gas production, there are many changes that need to happen to provide more clarity to investors and more incentives. On the one end, the issue is pricing. Natural gas is very cheap in Armenia, both for consumers and for producing electricity, because it all comes from Russia and comes at low prices. And eventually this signal has to change. And there are many different ways. One way would be to change electricity tariffs to make them also more flexible, reward solar energy, and also change the tariffs depending on the time of the day. The problem with solar energy is that sometimes you produce a lot of it, sometimes you don't. And so this has to be reflected in tariffs as well to make demand a little bit more responsive. Same for water. The reason why water is being wasted so much is also because water tariffs are not really adequate. Mm. So in general, price incentives are a big instrument that can be used. But now we need to be very careful because we don't want to hurt people that are the poorest and, you know, that would start paying higher energy or water prices. So when government introduces these kinds of reforms, we have to use other instruments like social protection or other kind of support for the poorest and most vulnerable households so that they get more support and don't end up paying more for energy.
Yeah, because it's oftentimes it is the most vulnerable that are impacted by these things. Another thing in the report that I wanted to quickly mention, again, these I had some aha moments as I was reading it. In the report, you say that decarbonization would also improve air quality and reverse severe land and forest degradation. Armenia has high land degradation, and this is aggravated by high deforestation rates. 70% of Armenia's forests are degraded. What does that mean?
Yes, it means that they've been either burned down or cut.
70%?
Yes, of historical forests. Mostly they've been cleared for agriculture production or for producing wood for heating.
In the rural
rural areas, right, right. Yes.
But I thought that that had diminished significantly with natural gas now being available throughout the country. But in your report, obviously, it's still a concern.
It is still a concern, although the trend is decreasing, but there are still areas, there are still a lot of people in Armenia that rely on wood for heating. And actually, that's one of the challenges of decarbonization is that going from wood to electric would be very expensive for them. So they would need to receive quite a lot of support from the government in order to use electric heating instead of wood. But that's another very important side of decarbonization, and that is linked to the biodiversity story that you mentioned at the beginning, mm-hmm. is that reforestation, changes in agricultural practices that integrate forests and nature are also really important in this transition. First of all, because it reduces greenhouse gases emissions. Trees, when they grow, absorb carbon. So the more you grow forests, in a way, the less you have to do to reduce emissions, other mm-hmm. emissions that might be expensive. But at the same time, it also brings more resilience to your agriculture sector. We found in a recent global report that the World Bank is about to publish that areas that grow agriculture next to forests that have been cut are much more vulnerable to droughts than if you have a forest nearby, because the forest nearby is absorbing humidity and preserving humidity in the soils in a way that even if it doesn't rain for a long time, you have more water actually for your agriculture system, especially for rain-fed systems that don't receive water from irrigation, which is half of Armenia.
On the flip side of this, what role should or can civil society, municipalities, we talked about private sector, play in shaping Armenia's climate future? Do they have a role to play?
Yes. They absolutely, they need to see that climate action is a priority and an opportunity for the country. There are so much investment opportunity, job creation opportunities that come with investing in decarbonization or in these different adaptation techniques, reforestation, resilient agriculture. And there are already a lot of businesses that have seen these opportunities in Armenia, but I think the general public might not necessarily be aware of the opportunities. And there is a role for institutions like yourself, for journalists to also communicate about what the future could be for Armenia and how we get there and what are the barriers that are preventing the country from getting there.
It's interesting because I find the younger generation in Armenia is much more aware of climate issues, whereas the older generation, not so much. And we always used to say, well, Armenia isn't producing, doesn't have a big industry, refineries that are emitting toxins into the air. Therefore, we're not contributing to climate change. And yet we are one of the most vulnerable countries that will be impacted by climate. And so that awareness, I think, any kind of push from the bottom up to ensure that proper legislation is being enforced or enacted can definitely make a change. If you were, I know you're an economist, but if you had the levers of power in your hand for a country like Armenia, what would be the next or first practical steps to take to start moving toward a greener, more eco-friendly? She's smiling.
That's a difficult question because unfortunately, there is no one instrument, one silver bullet that will change everything. Economists love to talk about carbon taxes, upstream carbon taxes, because in a way, they send a very clear signal to the whole economy that fossil fuels are no longer the future and that they will be more expensive and we need to move away from them. But those instruments tend to be extremely politically unacceptable. People just hate the idea of carbon taxes. And it's because what they see is an immediate increase in their energy bill. And I understand why they don't like it. I come from France and, you know, we had this yellow jacket protests.
Yes, but you have protests all the time in France.
We have protests all the time. But, you know, people have a point that if they don't have a choice in their choices, in like the kind of transport options that they have or the kind of heating options that they have, then they just end up paying more. So we cannot really just use blanket upstream carbon taxes in this way. However, there are many different combinations of instruments that can be used. And that's why it's taking time to transition, because it's a layer of instruments, right?
Sure.
Like so rebates, for example.
Yeah, even more developed countries, richer countries, countries with more potential are having difficulty transitioning to
Yes. Also
and
because
then to
of the political
a country like
economy.
Armenia to do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, right? It's hard. And we see even in the US today, some reversal of policies. But, you know, it's also advancing in a lot of countries. It's hard to see right now because it's slow. But there are lots of policies, especially support to buying these new technologies, support to electric vehicles, support to buying heat pumps. That can go a long way into making the shift. It just takes time for people to replace their cars and replace mm-hmm. their heating mm-hmm. system. Another very important pillar, in a way, of this transformation is building renovation and energy efficiency. Because it's, again, energy inefficiency.
We do not have energy efficient buildings in Armenia. For sure.
Yeah. And green buildings have so many benefits. Also from a resilience perspective, if you're going to renovate your building to make it energy efficient, you can also make it resistant to earthquakes, which is also needed in Armenia in a lot of places. And, you know, if you start doing a cost-benefit analysis,
mm-hmm. which we have to learn how to do,
which I do all the time, you see huge benefits. But then there's an upfront cost that's high. Not everyone can afford to sure. make this investment.
Sure.
And you need the technical capacity in the country, in the construction industry, and then in the pool of experts to inspect the building, tell you exactly what needs to be done. And that also needs to be built. You know, even in France some years ago, people were looking for experts in energy efficiency, and there were very few. And in Armenia, I heard today that, you know, you can count on two hands the number of experts in the building sector that know mm-hmm. how to build energy efficiency.
I don't even think we have
efficiency.
Experts in water management really either in Armenia. Yeah. That's part of the problem, I think, that we have is the human capital or the needed expertise in the population. That's something that needs to be addressed. Look, transitioning to any form of a new way of living is difficult, complex, and requires not only the proper legislation, it requires the political will, and it requires social consciousness, it requires a demand, it requires a lot of cost-benefit analyses. But what is your outlook, knowing what you know about Armenia, because you've done this extensive report, and I know I asked you an impossible question earlier about what would you do.
I'm glad I'm not in charge.
Look, if you were to take one first step, what would it be?
I mean, one thing I'll say, you know, we've done those analyses, those country climate and development reports in 70 countries by now. And there are a lot of countries for which this transition is a lot more challenging than for Armenia. Because, first of all, Armenia starts from relatively low emissions from a global perspective because of natural gas. And it has this huge potential for solar energy, which makes it cheap to decarbonize, even though, like we discussed, it's not that easy to make the investments. And then based on that, you know, the price of electric cars is really going down mm-hmm. because of the investments made in China. And soon electric cars will be cheaper than gasoline cars for right. everyone. And then if you have this solar potential, you can very quickly benefit from this. So I think because the economics are there, eventually there will be more and more support from the population and the private sector for effective, you know, laws and regulations in favor of these transitions. What's really important, I think, is to make sure to protect the people that cannot afford to buy an electric car or to buy a heat pump and make sure they are included in the transition.
But also, you know, subsidies can be provided for those yes. Vulnerable segments in the
Absolutely.
Society so that they're not impacted. With electric cars, and we're seeing in Armenia now, a lot of people are buying electric cars and or hybrids, which is, I think, a great thing. But my question is, what happens to those batteries? What does that do to the environment once they are out of commission?
Well, that's a great question. There are ways to recycle them, and actually we should be recycling them, because this would really reduce the pressure on critical minerals, which is, the new oil. Right now, everyone's looking for these critical minerals. And it's creating also environmental impacts where it's extracted. By the way, Armenia has a lot of copper that mm-hmm. is in high demand for this transition to electric economies. The concern with all these is the environmental impact. So mining companies have to learn to extract these minerals in a way that's more environmentally friendly. Now, on the battery side, I agree with you. There's huge need for recycling. And again, that's something where countries have to build the technical capacity to be able to do it. And there are very few countries in the world right now that are able to recycle these batteries. And it's not just the batteries, it's the whole electric car that needs to be serviced, repaired. The good thing with electric cars is that they have a much longer life than a gasoline car. You can keep it longer, it's more efficient. It's overall, it's a great investment. But indeed, you need people in the country that can repair it when it's broken.
So many issues. It all looks great on paper, but operationalizing is always the most difficult thing.
But it's also a lot of opportunities, right, for creating new businesses.
Yes, yes, of course. And I hope that the powers that be in Armenia and our leaders can see it as an opportunity and help the private sector also, you know, bring these investments. And I'm sure the World Bank and organizations like yours can step in to make these changes happen. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about this report. And I encourage our readers to read the executive summary, at least. I know it's a couple, it's a very long technical report, but it's very, very eye-opening, I think. And as a citizen, and as a person living in a country like Armenia, I think it's important for all of us. So thank you.
Thank you very much.